You. Hi, I'm Mike. I am the pastoral leader of this church. We're Genesis Church. We're kind of a new church. We just got started a few months ago. And we really want to be a place where people encounter the living God. But one of the problems with that is so often people who want to encounter God and get to know Him and have Him make a difference in their lives, we kind of get self-centered and get comfortable with who we are and forget that God really has a greater purpose for us than just to satisfy ourselves. I've been part of church all my life. I kind of grew up in church. For some people, that's not their experience. So I kind of had the opportunity to look from the inside and notice that sometimes churches can get very self-centered and very content with who they are and forget the world around them. And at the same time, we can kind of create this perspective of who we are that maybe isn't what we want to be known as. That's just, I don't know, maybe that's my experience and not what you've noticed. But my fear for us is that if we're not careful as a group of people, we will put ourselves in a situation where the world kind of looks at us and goes, I don't get that, but they are all about themselves. And that's not what God put us here. That's not when God makes a difference in the lives of people. He never does it so they can just get content with themselves and happy and full of themselves. He always does it so that He can show Himself through those people. And so we've been looking at the book of Genesis. Genesis is a great book, first book of the Bible. We've kind of been studying some of the characters and some of the people in Genesis. We've been very specifically looking at the big stories of Genesis. Genesis kind of has a simple outline. The first couple chapters deal with creation, that God created everything. The God of this universe spoke and the world came into being. But not only that, He created people. He created men and women. Specifically, He started with Adam and Eve and He put them in the garden and they were the crown, the ultimate of His creation. But Adam and Eve had the opportunity to live for God, to know Him, to trust Him, to have a relationship with Him, but they made a decision to live for themselves. They kind of said, you know what? We want to be our own God. We want to call our own shots. We don't want to have somebody tell us what to do. We just want to be the boss of our own world. And what they did is they created a real disconnect between them and God because they chose themselves. And that's called the curse. Adam and Eve came under God's curse because they chose to live for themselves rather than live for their Creator. And so for the first 11 chapters of the book of Genesis, we just see that people, every person that kind of lives on this planet makes the same decision. They decide to live for themselves. They decide to please themselves instead of living for the best thing that they can live for, which is God. And all the way through, there's failure, there's heartache, there's disappointment, just bad treatment of each other, wars, and all kinds of crazy stuff. And even as we live today, all you got to do is pick up the morning newspaper, and you can see real evidence that we are pretty selfish people. We really like to please ourselves, and it really creates havoc. But God didn't create us that way. And so God loves us, and instead of just leaving us in the state we're in, God made a decision to call out some people. And He started with this guy named Abram. And He called out this guy named Abram, and He made a covenant with him, which means God entered into a relationship with him based on His promises. And He said, listen, you follow Me, and I will pour My love into your life. I will make a difference in you. But He did that so that Abraham and his, Abram's name later got changed to Abraham, so that Abraham and his family could be people on this earth that represented the God who created them. So that the world could kind of look at the people that Abraham and his family would become, and they could say, you know what, there's something different about those people. They don't just live for themselves, they live for something much greater, and it shows. And that's kind of where the story is going. Abraham has a son. He actually waits for till he's 100 years old, and God gives Abraham a son. His name is Isaac. Isaac is a great gift from God to Abraham and his wife Sarah. And after Isaac is born, God tests Abraham to say, what are you really going to live for? Is the most important thing in your life going to be you, or will it be your family, or will the most important thing in your life be Me? And God literally tests Abraham with an incredible test. And Abraham makes a decision that says, listen, I don't understand you all the time, God, but I will trust you. And he follows God. Isaac ends up getting married. We talked about that last week. He ends up with this wife. Her name is Rebecca. And they end up having kind of the same problem that Abraham had. She's barren. She doesn't have children. But they end up having these two boys. And this morning we're going to start looking at these two boys, Jacob and Esau. And we're going to talk specifically about this kid, Jacob, and how God kind of called out this one kid, this one child that is the grandson of Abraham, even though he's just, there's something wrong with this guy. I mean, he just kind of twisted from the get-go. He's just kind of a wicked dude. But God eventually will get a hold of his life. We'll get there in a few weeks. But we're going to look at this, and my goal as we look at the story of Jacob, as we look at this guy who just has issues and problems, what I want us to do is I want us to see in his life how we sometimes, those who have a relationship with Jesus, sometimes can end up just like him. So if you have your Bible, we're going to start by looking at a verse in Genesis chapter 18. And then we're going to flip over and look at the story. If you don't have a Bible, there's one at the end of your aisle there. We'd love for you to pick that up and use that. we will be in the book of Genesis, like I said, chapter 18, which is in the front of the Bible. If you don't have a Bible at home that's yours, or the one you have maybe is an older language, hard to read, we'd love for you to keep that as our gift to you. And just use that, read it, because we really believe that when you read the Bible, God will speak to you and will make a difference in your life. Genesis chapter 18, verse 19, God is speaking to Abraham. This is the grandfather of Jacob. And he's talking to Abraham about what his life is to be about. He's kind of explaining, listen, this is why I chose you. This is why I called you. And listen to what God says. It says, I have chosen him, meaning Abraham, that he may command his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing righteousness and justice, so that the Lord may bring to Abraham what he has promised to him. Now here's what's going on. God is saying, Abraham, you're going to have a son, your son's going to have kids, they're going to have kids, and eventually your kids are going to become a great nation. And that nation is going to become what eventually we know as Israel or the Hebrew people. And he says, listen, the reason I've chosen you, the reason I called you out, the reason I put you on this planet is because I want people to look at you and see me. I want you to live your life so that righteousness, being right with God, is part of your characteristic. I want you to do justice. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But I want you to live in such a way that people around you matter, and that the life that I've put in you, the love that I've put in you comes out so that other people see it. That's what I want for you. And I want you to teach that to your kids and your grandkids and your great-grandkids, just as long as you are a people. I want you and your family to represent me on this earth. See, Adam and Eve made a decision that said, God, self, I want me. God called Abraham, and Abraham started following God and said, listen, I will follow you. And at the heart of it, sometimes people who call themselves followers of Jesus, who may genuinely know him, we forget that the reason God put us here is to be a reflection of the God who loves us deeply. And so the problem with this story this morning, this guy Jacob, is that he ends up totally forgetting what he's about. From day one, God shows us this kid is chosen by God to fulfill God's purpose. That God is sovereign, that God is in control, and God even uses messed up people to accomplish his purpose. In a few weeks, God is literally going to go toe-to-toe with Jacob and change his character. But from day one, really, Jacob, even in his birth, is just a kid who just is kind of wicked and messed up, and he forgets the depth of God's love for him and what he's really supposed to do on this earth. And so the story, we're going to look at just a few facets this morning, aspects of this story of this kid named Jacob. And we'll begin in chapter 25 of the book of Genesis. Chapter 25 will be on page 17 in the Bible if you have one. And we'll begin with verse 21. What's going on here is that Isaac and Sarah are barren. They don't have children. They've waited a long time for children. And so it starts with Isaac praying and asking God to give them children. It says, Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. The Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. And the children struggled together within her, and she said, if it is thus, why is this happening to me? Now, imagine this. Having twins, We have a family in our church that had twins, and you know, they're great kids and they're so different. And you know, that's kind of what these boys are like. They're different. And the amazing thing is they didn't wait till they were born to start fighting. They started duking it out inside mama's womb. You know, they were, you know, they didn't like each other from day one. They fought like cats and dogs. They were just, you know, they didn't get along. And from day one, you know, all of a sudden Sarah's like, all right, something not right here. This is not the way pregnancy is supposed to feel. And so she starts talking to God, and she says, God, I don't understand this. What is going on? In verse 23, God speaks, and it says, the Lord said to her, two nations are in your womb. Two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The older will serve the younger. That's important. We'll come back to that in a minute. When her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak. So the first kid comes out. I mean, we've got twins. The first one's born, and he comes out. He is all red and hairy. I mean, it says like a cloak. He's like, well, he might have looked something like this. Where'd it go? We had it up there for a minute. He might, you know, maybe he looked like Elmo, you know, kind of red and hairy and, you know, like a cloak. But here's Esau. He's the first one born. And we find out he's a manly man. But then the second kid is born, and his name is Jacob. It goes on to say, so they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Here they are. The first one's all red and hairy, but the second one is literally grabbing his brother. And the image here is he's like, no, I want to be first. I want to be the one who's in control. I know that, you know, being first matters, and, you know, this is the kid who's always cutting in front of the line. You know, he's pushing kids out of the way. This is George Costanza when he yells fire, if you ever saw that episode, you know, where he, you know, he's pushing down little old ladies to get to the door, you know, to make sure he's the first one out when there's a fire. This is this kid who just thinks life is all about me from day one. Now, we are all kind of like that. But they name him Jacob. Jacob, literally the name Jacob means heel grabber. Or it means somebody who is all about me. We kind of got our stained glass windows. Because, you know, kind of where we want to go with this is to say, listen, so often those people who are called by God and loved by God forget that it's about him and not about me. And this is kind of Jacob's character. This is kind of who he is all through the story. The Bible tells us over in the book of Romans that before Jacob and Esau were even born, before they had done anything good or bad, God had chosen Jacob to be the instrument that he would raise up this nation through. That God's purpose was going to be done through Jacob. And that Jacob from day one was, you know, part of God's purpose and God's plan. But even from day one, he didn't quite get this. He lived for himself. And he gets this name Jacob. The amazing thing about this name is not only is it the name that is called to this kid, but it becomes the name that is called very, very often for God's people all the way down the line. In fact, when we refer to God's people, the Israel, the nation of Israel, in the Old Testament, when God addresses them, he calls them predominantly by two names. One is Israel. We'll find out what that name means in a few weeks, but that is actually Jacob's second name. And the other one is the sons of Jacob. And over and over and over again, God says, listen, I want to speak to you, the sons of Jacob. They become very identified with this name. And the reason God does this is it is a constant reminder that you are special. You are chosen. You are my people. I put you here to live out righteousness. I put you here to live out justice. I put you here to be different, but you're living the life of your, you know, your father in the faith, Jacob. Instead of living for me, you're living for yourself. It is a way of God kind of just saying to them over and over, well over 100 times, he calls his people by the name sons of Jacob. And he's just literally saying, listen, you're supposed to live in a way that honors me, but you're living for yourself. And the reason I think that's important is because so often, I think people who are part of faith, that becomes our issue. That we get comfortable doing church. We get comfortable with a group of people. We have our sets of beliefs. And all of a sudden, the characteristic, the way the world looks at the people inside God's house, inside of God's church, inside of God's people, the way the world looks at us is they say, you know, they're just a Jacob. They're all about themselves. And people, you know, you try to have conversations with people, say, hey, Jesus matters. He is awesome. And one of the major barriers to people coming to Christ and trusting Jesus is they look at people who've been part of the church and they say, but wait a minute. I know all these people who claim to be Christians. They live for themselves. So what I want to do over the next few weeks is use this character Jacob and talk to you about him. But what I want to really do is I want to point out from his life vision for Genesis Church. Because I don't want us to be a church that's like that. I want us to be a church that lives out God's purpose and to be a church that literally, as we do the things God wants us to, that people will look at us and say, you know, there is something different. There is something about them that just doesn't make sense. And I wish I knew what it was. We don't want people in Eureka. We want to be in love with this community. We want to be a place, a group of people that are in Eureka to make a difference here. We don't want Eureka to look at Genesis Church and go, you know, they're just stuck on themselves. We want people to look at Genesis and say, man, we are so glad you are in our community because you do make a difference here. You do represent God, and we can see that in you. That's our desire. And so we're going to look at the life of this guy and see how maybe he kind of messed things up. But as we see how he messed things up, maybe we can see, look into ourselves and say, listen, we can be different. We can live for something that's so much better and make such a difference here. And so there's some interesting stories, and even this morning we're going to look at a couple things about his life. The first one starts in verse 29, where he and Esau have grown up a little bit. In verse 28 it says, Isaac loved Esau because he ate game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. And it says, once when Jacob was cooking stew, Esau came in from the field, and he was exhausted. Now here's these two boys. They grow up. Jacob is still this, you know, very smooth, chic, cool. I mean, let's be honest. In the Bible, he is the first metrosexual in the Bible, okay? He is this guy who, you know, has to have his hair just right and, you know, has the perfect amount of gel and, you know, he's got the right car. He's cool. His favorite movie is High School Musical. I mean, this is the kind of guy he is, okay? This is the type of person that Jacob is. On the other hand, Esau is a manly man. You know, he's always got, you know, his gun hanging on the rack of his camel ready to go, you know? He is a guy who's, you know, he's the guy who's riding around all the time just scouting where the good, you know, game places to hunt are. You know, he spends hours just hunting, and then I eat what I kill. Ooh, yes. This is Esau, you know. He is, you know, when he's watching TV, he's got, you know, hunting shows and fishing shows on. He ESPN Outdoors is his favorite program. This is Esau. These are these two boys, total opposites. And the question comes up, why did God choose Jacob over Esau? And the answer is, the Bible never tells us. Now, it's not that God was just totally rejecting Esau. But the thing was that God wanted to do something incredible, and God is in control. What God always shows us by choosing people is that he's God and he does what he wants to. I wake up very often, and I look at myself, and I knew very clearly that God called my wife and I to do Genesis Church, what's going on today. But almost every Sunday morning, I wake up and I go, you got to be kidding me. I'm going to go stand up in front of a group of people and speak for you. I don't get that. I don't understand why God would choose me to do that. But I know that he did. And see, Jacob understood from day one, God spoke to his mom and said, the older will serve the younger. Jacob, the second one, the preppy boy, the one who's got to be cool and has to check his looks out and is just not quite the guy who's going hunting and watching NASCAR. I chose him. He lived with that. But what happens in his story is instead of living for that, he says, listen, this is about me. I'm the important one. I'm the one that God called. And so he says, verse 30, he says, Esau said to Jacob, let me eat some of the red stew, for I'm exhausted. Therefore, his name is called Edom. Jacob said, sell me your birthright now. And Esau said, I'm about to die. Of what use is my birthright to me? Now, a birthright is literally, in those days, it was the way that you would honor the oldest son. When, if you had two sons, you would break your inheritance into three sections, and the oldest would get two parts, the youngest would get one. If you had 10 sons, you'd break it into 11 sections, and the oldest would get two parts of that, and everybody else would get one part. It was a way of honoring the oldest son. And so Esau's been out hunting, bad day hunting, you know, it's just hadn't worked out. The ducks didn't fly in, the deer didn't move in. I mean, he just had nothing. And he is literally exhausted and famished. He is starving. He walks up to his brother, and his brother's got some red beans and rice ready to go. Now, I chose red beans and rice because it says it was red stuff. It was kind of a Jewish lentil thing, but that sounds like red beans and rice to me. And so he walks up and he's, you know, his brother's got this big old pot of red beans and rice because instead of hunting, Jacob is like into culinary arts, you know, manly man Jacob, you know, he's cooking. He took home ac, his brother took shop, and he's cooking and he's got this red beans and rice going. And his brother Esau walks up and says, I am starving. I'm about to pass out. I'm about to die. I'm so hungry. No deer today, no ducks, no pheasant. I mean, no luck. I have nothing to cook, and I am famished. And Jacob, instead of looking at his brother and says, listen, God has blessed me. Let me bless you. He says, yeah, I'll give you some red beans and rice. Sell me your birthright. Give me that other half of my dad's inheritance so I can be the most important one in the family. That's what he does. Esau despises his birthright, which isn't, I mean, both these kids are kind of messed up. Instead of honoring his place in the family, Esau's like, listen, I don't care about that. Just give me some food. But Jacob, you know, he should have been somebody who had compassion and love. So often we in the church, it's kind of where people that are part of God's family end up. We end up being the type of people we go, hey, we're special and we know it. I mean, you know, we're Christians. We've got it all together. We're followers of Jesus. And instead of realizing that God has blessed us and we're supposed to be a blessing to others, we kind of create situation. We're people who sometimes we go into public square and we don't care about anybody but else. We go into our kids' classrooms, and instead of thinking about the good of the whole group, it's all, hey, I'm here just for my kid. Instead of honoring God with the way we live, we kind of make life all about us. We go to church and we say, you know, what can I get out of this? I'm going to sit here this morning. I hope I'm entertained. I hope I get a lot out of this. And God says, no. If you're my follower, I put you on this planet to represent me and to live for something bigger than yourself. I hope Genesis becomes a place where there's a lot of people like that. Not like Jacob. Not people who kind of sit in our rows of seats and are critical because, you know, Mike didn't say the right things. Or are kind of offended because, you know, the music got a little loud or it wasn't my style. I hope we become a group of people that literally give ourselves away and we represent all that God is. In chapter 27, I'll just tell you briefly what happens in the story. Chapter 27, they get a little older, and Dad Isaac is so old, he's losing his sight, he's losing his hearing, and it comes time to give the blessing. The birthright and the blessing went together. The birthright said, you'll get two parts of the inheritance. The blessing was a way that a dad would lay hands on a kid, and supposed to be in a public way, would say, you now are the leader of this family. Isaac decided to give the blessing to Esau, and Jacob, along with his mother, tricked his dad into blessing him instead. They put, you know, covered him with hair, you know, put animal skins all over him, and made him a pot of soup. His dad had said, Esau, I want you to go out and I want you to kill some game because I love eating your venison stew. Go out and make me some venison stew. Come back and we'll celebrate together and I will bless you. And so Esau left, and Isaac's wife, Sarah, heard this and said, you know, God had told me that Jacob was supposed to be the important one. Let's come up with a sneaky little plan. We'll deceive Isaac. They put hair all over him. They make the soup. He goes in. He pretends like he's his brother. And Isaac gives the blessing to Jacob. I mean, this guy's just a twisted little snot. We're going to see this all the way through. He's like this with everybody he runs into. His life reflects his name, heel grabber, all about me. And, you know, I just think so often, if you were to walk up to people and say, what do you think of people who claim to be Christians? For so many people, their opinion of us is the same as what we're thinking of Jacob right now. You know, they're really all about themselves. They're all about who they are. And God's desire is for us to live for something totally different and it to be visible. Over in the book of Micah, chapter 6, verse 8, God really lays this out. And kind of what I want to do this morning briefly is I want to show you three characteristics that if we as a church, Genesis, we kind of live these out as a people, we'll be different than Jacob. We'll be God, those whom God has placed here, whose God has chosen for this time, but we can live for something that's totally different. Look at this, Micah 6, 8. He's talking, he says, he has told you, O man, what is good and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God. Jacob never gets this until the end of his life. He eventually does. We'll look at that in a few weeks. But early in his life, he thinks, you know, I'm God's chosen. Therefore, I'm the one who's special. And God says, listen, he's told you what's good. What does the Lord require of you? To do justice, to love kindness, to walk humbly with your God. Three things real quick. If Genesis is going to be the type of church that lives out God's call and God's mission, what's going to happen? Well, first thing we need to do is we need to be a group of people who literally are a group of people that do justice. That we do justice. Now, what does this mean? What does it mean to do justice? Well, justice has two kind of ideas. There is the legal, moral idea of justice. That means that people get punished based on what they deserve. If you murder somebody, there is a judgment that needs to come on you to protect society. If you steal, a couple nights ago, my mom and dad got their car broken into and a whole bunch of stuff taken, and they're devastated by it. And if the person is caught, moral or legal justice requires that there is a punishment for the crime. But there's another type of justice, and that is social justice. That is the idea that we need to understand that God put us here and he blessed us. There's a lot of people who are not as fortunate as we are. And, you know, kind of living in suburbs all my life, sometimes I had ingrained in me that because my mom and dad drove a nice car, because I lived in a nice house, because I had good stuff, somehow I had ingrained in me that there was an aspect that I was better. That, you know, I'd look at people who were poor and had nothing, kind of down my nose, like, you know, I wouldn't say it, but in my heart, I'd say I'm better than you. And then growing up in the church, you kind of can do the same thing where you're like, you know, I'm a good person. You know, I don't, you know, do all that bad stuff. And, you know, I kind of grew up in a whole movement of churches that said, because I don't drink beer, I'm okay. And it's dawned on me, that's not the point. I'm not better than somebody because of things I don't do, or worse because of things that you may do. I mean, we could create our own systems. And by the way, I didn't say that to make a value judgment about alcohol. I just grew up in a system where that was kind of a defining line. If you don't drink, you're okay. And it was very easy to look at somebody else and go, well, you know, I am somebody. That's not the point. The point is to understand that God has blessed me beyond me, and I don't deserve any of it. And justice is a way of looking at people that says, you know what? But by the grace of God, I'd be in the same situation you are. I mean, if you were born in a country of Africa where there was poverty, you probably wouldn't be living in West County blessed right now. If you were born in a Muslim country, you probably would not be in a service this morning like this, hearing about Jesus. If you were born in other places, in other situations, your life would be different. We really are product of the situation we were born into. I was blessed to be born into a home where my parents loved Jesus. It is easy for me to look down my nose and look at people who aren't in that situation and go, well, I am somebody. But that's not justice. I was watching last night. I got a big kick out of this, okay? I was watching TV last night with my wife, and she was watching this show. She's an HGTV person, right? She just loves all these, you know, build stuff, renovate homes kind of stuff. But they had this show, and I think she just kind of left it on and wasn't really paying attention to it. This show that was about dog and cat homes. And they had this lady on there who was a soap opera star. And she had these two frou-frou looking dogs, okay? Kind of the type of dog that probably Jacob would own, you know? Fluffy little, you know, poodles with the little tail in the air and, you know, bows in their hair and all this stuff. And she owned these dogs in her house. I mean, she lived in this huge house. She had built a room that was bigger than my bedroom for these two dogs. They had a closet. I am not lying to you. These two little frou-frou dogs had like 50 or 60 outfits each. I mean, like dresses. What is wrong with this lady? She put these little booties on them so that when they came in from the outside, they could be refreshed and not have to worry about where they went and walked. And I'm sitting here looking at this, they are dogs. And then it dawned on me, what is the difference between these two little frou-frou poodles and a dog who's spending the night in the dog pound? And the answer is their owner. That's it. There's nothing special about those dogs. I mean, they might have had better breeding or who knows. I mean, but beyond that, they're just dogs. And here's what we have a tendency to do. We have a tendency to look at ourselves and then compare ourselves to people who don't have the blessings we have, and especially the spiritual blessings, look down our nose and say, well, I am somebody. Justice is when I get into the skin of those people that aren't blessed like me. That's what justice is. When he says do justice, what he's saying is live your life in such a way that you're giving yourselves away. And you're not doing it so that you can say, you know, sometimes I've gone and done mission trips where I do the mission, and when I'm done with it, I can feel good about myself because here I am, somebody who had stuff, and I gave it to somebody who didn't, and I feel superior because I went and helped people. Justice is when I begin to see people through the eyes of Jesus and treat them as he would and love them. We're starting community groups, small groups. There's a thing in your worship folder this week about it. But one of the things we want every one of our small groups to do, we want every small group to have a compassion project, a place where that group will do justice, will literally go and give themselves away. And we want people in our community to begin noticing that Genesis is a place that doesn't live like Jacob. We're not going to steal your birthright. We're going to be a place that goes and finds the hurting and needy people in Eureka, and we give ourselves away to them. That's what we want to do. We want to be a place that does justice. He also says that you need to love mercy. Love mercy. The word mercy really means that God's love, his covenant love, where he throws his love in the lives of people that don't deserve it. And he says we need to be people who love mercy. See, Jacob saw his position as blessed by God and chosen by God as something where he could, you know, kind of pop his collar up and go, I'm cool. I am somebody, you know? But God wants us to understand that we don't deserve any of that. And to love mercy means that I begin to look at myself properly. I begin to see that, you know, I don't know why God called me out. It doesn't make sense to me. I have issues and problems and sin, and I rebel. But not only that, that I begin to see how good God is, and I want everybody to know. America's Funniest Home Videos, a great cultural icon in America. We were watching it the other night, and this little kid is on there. And he's standing at the Christmas tree. And the dad looks at him and goes, you've been bad all year. And the kid goes, I know, I know. And then the dad goes, and Santa brought you presents anyway. And the kid goes, I know. Santa is so good. I loved it because, you know, we need to be people who realize, you know, you haven't been so good. I know, I know. But God was good anyway. I know. So often I do this. I lose the awe of the greatness of God and how good he is to me. And when I tend to do that, maybe you're not like this, I am. When I tend to do that, when I forget how good God is, it becomes very easy to treat others in a way that doesn't reflect the mercy of God. I can look down on people who have life issues, and I forget that it's God's mercy that makes a difference. I mean, I can look down on people who are you know, choosing to live a lifestyle that may not honor Christ. And instead of loving them and telling them about Jesus and letting them know there's a God who's merciful, I don't love mercy, I love myself. A church that loves mercy is going to be passionate about telling people the good news of Jesus Christ, because we love that mercy so much, we want everybody to experience it. We want people to understand how awesome and how incredible it is to feel God's forgiveness in our lives. He says, listen, love mercy. Do justice, love mercy. And he says, walk humbly with your God. See, Jacob never gets this until the end of his life. That knowing Jesus is a relationship that I walk humbly every day. That I look at him and I go, man, I don't deserve this, but thank you for knowing me. Thank you for blessing me. Thank you for letting me be in your life and you being in my life. Thank you for helping me to walk with you and know you. All through the Bible, walk means the manner of the way you live your life. He says, listen, I want you to live your life in a manner that you just hang out with God, that you know him and he makes a difference in your life. In the New Testament, there's a story about some of the followers of Jesus, his disciples, who get arrested after Jesus died and he rose again and Jesus made all the difference in the world. He died and rose again. And now his followers are living out this faith that he's given them. And they're literally arrested and they keep speaking boldly, telling the world about Jesus. They keep saying, listen, we love Jesus. And they finally, the authorities say, listen, we'll let you go. Just stop preaching Jesus. Stop telling people about the mercy of God and the love of God. Stop it. We don't want you talking about Jesus anymore. And the disciples, these fishermen and these, you know, common people who walked with Jesus, look at him and they say, listen, what you want to do is up to you, but we're going to do what God's told us, and nothing you can say can stop us. And they're kind of afraid, and they don't know what to do. And they make a statement about these followers of Jesus that's amazing. Look at this. When they saw the courage of Peter and John and realized that they were unschooled, ordinary men, they were astonished and took note that these men had been with Jesus. What a great thing. These guys were so bold and passionate about God and laid themselves on the line and lived in such a way that the justice of God flowed out of them. The mercy, their love for mercy was so evident. And their boldness to tell people about Jesus was so strong. And that these people looked at them and said, man, these are just normal people. We looked down our nose at them. They're nothing. They didn't grow up on the right side of the tracks. But then they said, but there's something about them. What is it? Those guys hung out with Jesus. This is my goal for Genesis. My goal for Genesis is that we will be a church full of people that live in Eureka and around. And when people look at us, they will go, those people, they must have been with Jesus. There's something different. And I just hope that we can kind of pour that out into people. Jacob never gets this till the end of his life. He's called by God and blessed by God, but he spends it on himself and lives his life all about me. And I hope that we as a people, Genesis, will be the type of church that the world takes notice. When people talk about us in 3 or 4 years, what are they going to say? You know what? And this is kind of just real quick for those of you who have kind of been hanging out with us from day one. Routine in doing church becomes the most dangerous thing when it has to do with living these things out. Because all of a sudden we're doing the stuff of church. And we forget that this is about justice. You know, loving people and helping people and putting ourselves in the shoes of people who aren't blessed like we are. Loving mercy, just being incredibly passionate about what God has done in our life. And then walking humbly with our God, a day-to-day active relationship. Sometimes I have to stop myself and go, you know what? I'm just doing the routine of church. I'm not walking with God. So here we are. We've kind of started. We've been around for a few months, and our first phase was getting off the ground, launch. Getting ourselves off the ground and doing church. This has been exciting. It's been exciting to come here every Sunday and work hard, but then, you know, to see what God does. And we hope that this place literally becomes a place where God shows up every week and people are blessed. But then our next phase, where we're at right now, is we did our launch, doing church together. Now we're kind of going into phase two, which is doing mission, which means that we're going to start finding ways in this community and beyond to do justice, to love, to show how much we love the mercy of God in our lives, and to walk out our faith, to walk humbly with our God. That's our desire. That's my dream. I don't want to be like Jacob, where people look at us and go, you know, they're just a bunch of people. They're all about themselves. I hope that you're the type of person that when you walk into a public setting, they can see these things in your life. I hope that I am. I've been challenged this week by just studying this because I realize I have so far to go. And the answer to all of this is Jesus. Because he is the perfect representation of somebody who did justice. He did the ultimate justice by looking at us, realizing we didn't deserve it, and dying on the cross. He poured out his mercy, the mercy of God, giving us what we didn't deserve. And he opened the door for us to have a relationship with God Jesus is the answer. Trust him. We're going to pray. After prayer, we're going to do some worship, and we're going to sing. And I just hope that you'll think about how you can love justice and or love mercy and do justice and live out faith. Pray for Genesis. This is the church we want to become. And we hope you'll kind of hang out and go along for the ride with us and be part of that with us. We're going to pray. After we pray, stand, sing with us. One of our responses is giving. If you are a guest with us today, this is not for you. We give those who are part of Genesis. It's a way of saying God's done so much for us, and we're just giving back to him. But that's one of our responses. If you'd like to hear more about what it means to know Jesus, have a relationship with him, I'd love to chit-chat with you about that. I'll be at the information table afterwards. But pray that we'll become the type of church that isn't like Jacob, that we do the things that God's called. Lord, we love you. Jesus, we praise you. We ask you to speak to us this morning. Help us worship you and just pour our hearts out to you today. And Jesus, I thank you for all that you've done for us. I thank you that everything in my life is a gift of your mercy. And help me to be a person who doesn't look down my nose and think I'm better, but help me to realize that I can crawl into the shoes of those who are hurting. And Lord, help me to walk humbly with you. In your name I pray. Amen.